Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Show tapes live some Thursdays on our YouTube channel, ANN Zach. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more.
Hope you enjoy the show.
Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. Jacob's here.
Hey, folks.
And we're back. So last week we watched 50-some episodes of Gundam Wing. That episode is in the can.
Yeah.
It's out there. I gave a painful birth to it, and now it wanders the streets in search of sustenance.
I can feel my brain waves.
If you see it, push it into the street.
I can feel my brain waves washing the memories away as they, like, gently lather my brain cells.
Yeah. I'm going to get you some Gundam Wing action figures for Christmas.
Yeah.
So that show is done, and we also, because that show was last week, we haven't really caught up on anime, and we didn't get a chance to talk about the Crunchyroll Awards, which were two weeks ago around, right? About 2 weeks ago. We were there in person. I was a judge for the Crunchyroll Awards this year. Mm-hmm. Thank you to Crunchyroll for inviting me to do that. It was an interesting experience. We went to the show itself, got all duded up. Went over there, and it was at the Montalban Theater in Los Angeles. What did you think of the show, Jacob?
I thought it was really impressive. I wasn't at the show last year, but I watched it on live stream, and it seemed sort of an intimate, like, sort of party atmosphere. Like, I don't know, it was a little more low key, so I thought maybe I knew what to expect. But they really put a lot of they wrote like a full presentation script with a lot of like fun jokes and stuff, and they got the audience really involved, and it was just a really nice little celebration of anime, I think, and I was really impressed with it. By it, I had a nice time.
Yeah, it seemed very much like the show was geared a lot towards the Twitch audience, and I thought they did a great job with that. Like, mm-hmm. I really liked the throwing back and forth to the lobby. I thought they did a good job. There was complaining about the winners. What a stunner that is!
It's an initially curated popularity contest, which, yeah, I think is a fair system.
Well, like, judges have weighted just those.
Yeah, it's not just a popularity contest. It's giving you a full look at, like, okay, here's what's popular, but the nominees are what people who, like, sat through basically everything have settled on as, like, the stuff that they still remember at the end of the year. So, yeah. Like, it's look at the nominees if you want a full picture of, like, kind of what stuck with people, and look at the winners if you want to know, and of that, what's the most popular or the most, like, you know, or sometimes not even. Like, I was really surprised that Girls Last Tour won Best Slice of Life. I was like, well, it's going to be MMO Junkie. So that was the big surprise to me. I was like, oh, more people watched that than I thought. I was really heartened by that.
Mm, yeah.
It's a good show. Like, it's definitely what I would pick for Best Slice of Life. It's real good.
Also complaining about My Hero Academia winning, well, number one, so many awards, and two, the Best Animation Award over A Silent Voice, which, just throwing it out there, shouldn't have been in the category.
Right, it's like that's
it should have been TV shows, yeah, and then movies. Best animation film, best animation TV, or just do TV. But you can't mix those. I don't think that's fair. That was kind of my only complaint about the actual awards, that A Silent Voice was in it. As a judge, what we had to do was narrow down the nominations. So I got a giant Excel spreadsheet of hundreds of anime to look at, and had to pick 10 for each category, and then those were narrowed down further, and then those were narrowed down further, and it was actually quite a long process. It was a little grueling, but I enjoyed it. Like, it was fun. It really had to sit there and think about, you know, what I was going to vote for and everything. I thought the show was fine. But, you know, the resulting discourse, and they're definitely going to do it again next year, I assume bigger, I assume better. I think the discourse that happened as a result was kind of like, well, there's two kinds of award shows. There's People's Choice and there's the Oscars. People's Choice is voted on by the public. The Oscars is a voting body of selected members from the industry who are...
people who have won an Oscar and people who have influential positions in the Academy.
Yes, exactly. And so that is a, you know, Academy voting membership. And the Crunchyroll Awards do not have that yet. And who knows, maybe it'll turn into something like that. But I think that we need... it would be good to have both. I think this is great, and I think they should keep doing it that way.
I thought it was a good happy medium, and I think it's like it tells you a lot about both sides of the, you know.
Anime is a little bit more community driven than a lot of other mediums,
yeah.
Especially in the West, and I think that the community's tastes should matter a lot and should count for a lot, and the awards should be decided on the community's taste. I think there should also be an international. Now, these organizations exist in Japan, and there's I got into a thread in this on Twitter last week or 2 weeks ago, and you know those organizations already exist in Japan for recognizing excellence in the anime industry, but there is no international organization made up of the entire global industry of anime that recognizes that stuff every year. So potentially you could start something like that and then also have a People's Choice kind of awards, or you could continue kind of trying to hybridize it in the way that Crunchyroll is kind of appearing to do with this. Either way, I think it's a valid approach. Either way, it's just for funsies. Either way, you are always going to have complaining about the results, especially... Well, no, not either way. You're going to get a lot of bitching about the results. Either the judges were biased or whatever the fuck was wrong with the judges, or the audience, yeah, they only picked it because of this, or it's a conspiracy because Crunchyroll blah, or whatever. That's always going to happen. You can't avoid it, so just do the best you can. Put on a nice show. Put on a fun show. Make sure people get awards. Number one thing I'd really like to see is the people involved in actually making the show there to accept their awards. That would be cool.
That would be really neat.
I think it makes a lot of sense for them to do the Crunchyroll Awards around Crunchyroll Expo so that it makes sense to bring people for the awards. But
right.
Crunchyroll Expo is in the fall.
Right.
Well, it's in late summer. It's in late summer. So
by that time, people are not thinking about 2017 anymore.
No, it's not a good time to do it. And they're not going to move their convention to... January. maybe it'll get big enough to where they can justify the expense or bring in a bunch of sponsors, and they can justify spending tens of thousands of dollars on, you know, bringing over Japanese talent and also, you know, making sure that you have the availability, which I would imagine is the bigger issue with actually finding holes in these people's schedules on the same
for
100%,
yeah, 100%.
For a huge swath of the anime industry. You'd have to do it in Japan.
Yeah.
I think you'd have to have the ceremony in Japan, which I think might, you know, I think that's fine, but for the intention of, like, an international thing, maybe you could have, like, different host countries. That would be cool. Do it in the UK some
this
years.
This is all stuff, France, like, this is years. Their second year doing this.
Yeah.
This is the second annual.
The far-off distance space. You know. You know what I love? There's potential. They're doing a great job, I think, and they're going to keep doing it. So
yeah.
We get to watch it grow. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Good for them. Mm-hmm. Cool. You know, there was another award show, Jacob.
Yes, I have heard tell.
Yeah, it's called the 90th Annual Academy Awards.
I did not.
Have you heard of this one? This is they've been doing it for almost 100 years now, and they get a bunch.
I actually did not watch even like 1 second of the Oscars this year. That's the first time in maybe ever, like since I was like a child, maybe
wow.
That I didn't watch the Oscars because I was just like, you know, I just don't care this
yeah,
year.
Yeah, fuck it.
I just don't care. And
fuck
you know what?
It.
Apparently, I wasn't the only one because this was the lowest ratings for the Oscars that they've had. In how long?
Ever. It was the fewer than 30 million viewers for the first time in the broadcast's history.
Yeah. So I was apparently feeling the zeitgeist a little bit because I was like, I just don't care about what these Academy voters have to say about these movies that I didn't particularly care about winning the Oscar. Like,
yeah,
the
well,
stuff that I cared about had no chance and I wasn't interested.
Yeah, I don't know. So the Oscars this year, the winner was The Shape of Water. Good for Guillermo del Toro, though
yeah.
I did not love The Shape of Water at all. And like
this was his The Departed, I think.
It was fine. The Departed was also fine.
Yeah, right.
People really love The Shape of Water, and that's fine. I think I'm going to watch it again. I think I went into it kind of thinking it was going to be one thing, and it wound up being another thing. And while I don't think the thing that it is like Best Picture... Mm-hmm. I didn't know what the Best Picture was until I fucking watched it on the day of the Oscars.
And it wasn't nominated.
It wasn't nominated. I slept on this movie, The Florida Project, which if you're listening to this, watch the film The Florida Project. And frankly, the entire filmography of filmmaker Sean Baker, who is an incredibly talented filmmaker that I was not exposed to until I watched The Florida Project on the Friday of the Oscars, and he blew my fucking head off. Mm-hmm. And then I watched Tangerine, and that also kind of blew my fucking head off. And I was like, who is this man, and what is this? What is his magic?
Right.
You should watch The Florida Project. I didn't know about few people had told me to watch it, but not like this strong recommendation or anything. Like, and I'd heard it was a bummer, so I put it off. And then finally got to it and was like, fuck! Like, it was incredible. I think it ends really strong.
Like, if you're like, oh, this is interesting, but, like, what really makes this stand out? Like, you have to sit down. Like, you have to ingest the whole thing and get to the ending.
What makes it stand out is the astonishing cinematography and filmmaking on display.
Yes, I know.
If
but
you're
I'm
into
just saying,
that kind of thing, it's fucking...
It's a slow burn. It's like being shot a little bit because you're like... You're like, yeah, this is entertaining. Yeah, this is engaging. Like, yeah, this is thoughtful. Like, you're just into it, but you don't like realize you're looking at greatness until I think it's over. And maybe it's over and like a day has passed. Like, it's that kind of movie is what I'm saying.
I kept thinking about it, and then you wanted to watch it again the next day.
I wanted to watch it for the first time.
I watched it without you, and then you were like, I did want to watch that, and I was like, yeah, let's watch it. And I watched it again, and it got me even more the second time. So.
Yeah.
Really special film, and I think everyone should see it. There's not a person I know who I wouldn't say watch this movie. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the Oscars were the Oscars. The show was lame and kind of dull. the winners were the winners. I watch it. I'm never going to not watch it. I've given a shit since I was a kid, at least a little bit.
I don't even know who was fucking hosting it this year.
It was Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh.
His name is, at least it's
That's
not Jimmy know. Fallon. That's
right.
on his driver's
That's
license.
That's his name? Yeah. Okay.
His driver's license says, at least it's not Jimmy Fallon.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the jokes were shruggo, whatever, and the speeches were shruggo, whatever. I mean, they're okay, I guess. And, like, Three Billboards won a bunch of acting awards, and I didn't like that movie.
Y'all don't know what, like, except for Frances McDormand, nobody knows what these accents sound like. I hate to break it to you.
The accents were not...
They weren't accurate.
Yeah.
They weren't
anyway,
accurate.
So the Oscars came and went. Thankfully, Boss Baby went home empty-handed.
I think everybody knew that one.
Yeah, no. Coco, there's another fucking movie I kind of slept on. Like, I saw it when
You
it
saw it
out.
In the theater with
I,
me, and you
I
were
know.
Like, eh.
Yeah,
and I was
I
like,
was
but
like,
it was
eh.
good, you know?
I was like, eh, because I really had a problem with the third act turn. Mm-hmm. The murder thing. I was like, what? I just couldn't
I didn't like how it was presented. I was like, if this was foreshadowed better, then I would have liked it
And I didn't
more.
Like the but, whole, like, absolutely no music. Absolutely none at all.
I was okay with that.
I was like come on. But then I watched it again, and it melted my heart, and I realized, like, okay, Zach, there's more to it than just, like, the story
the plot,
had
yeah.
some stuff in it that bugged you a little bit. Like,
plus we
now
saw the,
I've seen it, like, four times, and I love it.
Plus we saw the deleted scenes for it, and we were like, oh, this
oh,
movie
man.
Could have been
Yo,
bad.
Get the Blu-ray of Coco. It has, like, 30 minutes worth of the story that they remade that movie. They worked on it for 6 years. Uh-huh. It
As
had like
to the
a
usual
dozen,
cycle of like
yeah,
four.
It had like a dozen different stories or something like that. Watch that. It didn't have a dozen. It was a few. But watch that. It's pretty interesting.
It's fascinating. Like stuff like that and Zootopia and like The Emperor's New Groove, where it's like, oh, this is really different. And it's like
yeah.
it's different because it started out the same.
Yeah.
Like because Zootopia didn't. Zootopia started out too different, and it became a little bit more careful, but in a good way. And Yeah, usually it's like, oh, this is really different and unique. It's like, you want to see the first draft? Because it's just, like, Disney mush. Like, unflavored Disney mush that they didn't, you know. And then somebody said, hey, let me save this. And
yeah.
it didn't become that. That's what happens. At the
yeah.
end.
Yeah.
With the good movies.
Yeah. Yeah. So, there's that. I thought the Florida Project was robbed.
100%.
For a couple hours. Willem Dafoe was nominated, and even he was like they. I saw an interview with him, and he was like, "I was the only person nominated for this movie, so I just hope people see
well,
it."
Well, Zach, the others aren't actors. You can't just invite an Instagram model to the Academy Awards.
Well, like, and the little girl, I thought definitely. Anyway, at least editing, at least cinematography, like shit.
Zach, she's not like
Did
an
they
actress.
Not
like
watch
Jacob
it?
Tremblay is an actor, you know,
or Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah,
Call Me by Your Name 2 coming soon. Electric Boogaloo.
I don't know what to do about that.
That
did you
could
just,
actually
did you
be.
Just, did, no, I'm going to stop and shame you. Did you
that
just
could
say,
actually just be? Yeah, because it'll be set in the 80s, right?
That is a stretch. You still just dropped the hackiest sequel joke.
You're right.
Shame on you.
Call Me By Your Name 2, Panic on Funkatron.
All right, there you go.
Call Me By Your Name and the Chamber of Secrets.
Sliding through.
That's already on fanfic.net.
Yeah.
Womp, womp. All right, what, man, I'm full of some hack shit today, man.
The Chamber of Secrets is the peach. The secrets
oh,
is
come.
Oh,
come on, man. Don't make me think about come. That fucking peach thing right now.
Sorry.
All right.
Sometimes you just need a peach.
Speaking of peaches, did you watch Darling in the Franxx this week?
I think so. I think I saw the most recent one.
This is the episode that opens with Goop mysteriously falling through the ceiling and melting their costumes off. And the boys ogle the ladies, and they're like, yeah! And then they get upset, and they're like, all right, now we've had it. We're splitting this apartment in half. I'm making a masking tape line down the center of the room. Now you stay on that side, and we stay on this side. And then they say something to the effect of, so you're saying I can do whatever I want on my side of the room?
And I'm like, what?
Family Matters will be right back after these messages.
Yeah, so I'm convinced at this point that I will be impressed. So this is the level that my expectations for Franxx have fallen. I will be impressed if narratively, not aesthetically or visually, although a lot of that's copycatting too, but at least there's some uniqueness. Not much. It's mostly like pastiche, but it's okay. Like there's something. But I will be surprised, and pleasantly so, if there is one unique narrative idea in this entire show, because I kind of can't believe how unoriginal and uncreative it is. It is bereft of anything thoughtful or original at all.
All right.
That is
well,
my perception.
So that happens, and then the boys actually, I thought, had a conversation where they rolled the ball forward a little bit on emotional maturity for like a minute. They were like, you know, they are just trying to do their job. We probably shouldn't. It's not cool for us to ogle them while they're trying to work. Like, we're in this together. Let's show them some respect. This sucks. It creates strife, and we have to be a team if we want to survive.
Yeah, and I appreciated that.
It is immediately undercut.
Immediately.
It is immediately undercut
they
by
give
the
that
girl.
For a second.
It is immediately undercut by the girl delivering a speech about how, look, the boys are perverts, and I don't know what goes through their heads, but boys and girls are just totally different, and we have to get along for the future of the species.
And then it ends in like a, you saw everybody's naked and everybody's seeing each other naked and we're throwing things,
they were throwing
that
an
is not
endless
cathartic.
Amount of wash bowls.
There were a
they
lot of
had
bowls.
Thousands of those bowls. Thousands.
Well, it's a trigger anyway, so I'm okay with that. It was like, what is tone?
They
fucking
threw those bowls at them for 10 fucking minutes at the end of that episode. And I was like, they're going to run out of bowls any minute now. Any minute now.
Yeah.
Any minute now. Any minute now.
See, those are all the bowls of
any minute now.
And then it switches to drama. And see, those, I assume, were the empty wash basins used by the dozens of other Franxx squads that have gone.
So,
and that is like suddenly goes into horror. And she's like, no, the deceased, their ghosts are haunting us. And I'm like, what is this fucking tone?
The end of the episode, they're like discovering that the previous kids died, which is first the show treats it like a reveal to us.
It is not.
It's definitely not. But I feel so they hadn't said anything like that until now, because I feel like, wait, this isn't a reveal, or did I just expect it so much that I assumed? Of course.
Yeah. Well, and you're they're going for like tone whiplash, like you're lulled into a false sense of security before this big reveal.
And then, shocking.
Neither of that is true, because the light, like getting to know you thing, is this tired sitcom-y stuff that makes these characters seem more alien, not more human. And then when it's cut to the shocker, it's an expected thing. So this show feels like it was written by a computer. It's not like terrible or anything, but because terrible would necessitate it like
Jacob, hang on,
doing something weird.
No, hang on. I don't think you're being fair. Now, this is a pretty staggering twist. This has all happened before.
Mm-hmm.
Can you believe that? Like, these kids were like piloting the Franxx, and they're like, we're gonna save the world, and then they find out there were other kids before them, and they died?
It's a really big surprise considering they say it'll be better when we become adults 12 times an episode. Because that really lets us know that that's going to happen for them.
I can't. I just. What will happen next week?
Anyways, I the show, it feels like it was written by a computer is what I was going to say. It's not like bad. It just feels like it was a computer that analyzed and made a congregation, like a confluence of all these like sort of hybrid mech shows inspired by Evangelion and like printed a script. And then there are some talented artists who looked at that and said, okay, here's this script. Let's like do the shit out of it and borrow some imagery that's obviously borrowed by the script as well and echo that and some original stuff. But like the script is like a computer wrote this. There's not an original word that comes out of anyone's mouth. Like that is my take on it. It's not terrible. It's just like, god damn, they just did not think of anything interesting or unique.
Here's my prediction. There's going to be an episode where everyone has to switch positions in the Franks and the whole episode is just about that. It's going to be
I could see that, but it won't be subversive in any way. It won't be commentative. It'll just be like, this is why this doesn't work.
Well, hang on.
I expect it to be like that.
Did I say, like, and it will be subversive?
No, of course you didn't. I just wanted to hammer home, like, yeah, they'll do that, and they'll be like, this is why this just doesn't work. No, a lady piloting the guy.
The reason that they would do that is because there isn't any other scenario for them to do a sitcom main character takes a job different from the one he normally has for a single episode.
Right.
That's the only way they can really do that.
Otherwise, in fantasy series or, like, straight up Family Matters went bonko stuff, body swap episodes.
Right. Also, you need some kind of a fundraising episode. Maybe they'll go to Disneyland. They need to adopt a pet at some point. Yeah. All of these things will happen.
They're gonna kill a Klaxosaur, and the Klaxosaur is going to turn into like a cutesy ootsy version of itself, and it's gonna become a cute mascot that like the last episode has a cameo wherein it helps defeat the bad guy.
Theory. The Klaxosaurs are male parasites who didn't find appropriate partners.
The monsters were human all along. You think it's going to do that?
No, but that would just be That would just be the ultimate. I mean, sure, but that would just be the ultimate. This is what they become when they can't find
mates.
A true mate.
Well, okay, so we know that 02 is half Klaxosaur. She has Klaxosaur blood. So we know that that has something to do with it.
Yeah, there's something.
So it's, you know, look, if I'm surprised by even one narrative idea in this show, I will tell you on the podcast. I will be like, this was unique and I appreciate it because right now I'm setting the standard right here, right now. So far, there has not been anything, and I'm going to predict that there will not be anything for the rest of it.
Here's my I am still interested to know what the fuck it's gonna do. But no matter.
Me too.
No, I promise.
I think really.
I'm promising. I'm gonna watch Darling in the Franxx every fucking week until it's over.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do it. No matter what happens, I'm going to keep watching it.
Is it Schadenfreude or curiosity or both at this point?
I'm dedicated, mm-hmm. Jacob. I'm a very dedicated person.
Mm-hmm.
You know this.
Right.
Very dedicated. When I stick my mind to something, it happens.
Uh-huh.
I didn't lose all that weight for nothing.
Well, I just
I'm just going to apply that to Darling in the Franxx.
I just watch all the anime people are. Yeah.
I'll have to wake up in the morning and drag myself.
Drag yourself over to watch 20 minutes on the couch. Yeah, it's really good. I just watching it because people are jawing about it because this is kind of a light winter and you need and people want something with like a plot and like mech and action and animation and like this is what we have and everybody's like, well, I'll take it. Like I don't see much. I'm sure some people love it, but the overall tenor for Darling in the Franxx is like, I'll take it. I want something like this, but hoo boy, is there not a lot of calories in this, you know? And I wanted calories. I think this is most people's response to this.
I think the show is still entertaining, but not like in a good way.
Yeah, it's.
But I'm not. But I'll take it. Here's the thing. I can't sit here and say I'm hate watching it because I'm not. I do want to know where it goes. I actually, in spite of how. There is a voice in the back of my head still saying, with sincerity, maybe they'll subvert all this. And I know
I don't
know
believe it at this point.
Just let me have a little hope.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I
don't
look,
smash the spark, Jacob. Don't snuff it out.
I want that.
You're just reaching in with your fingers and just. Pst.
I want that hope as well. However, like, I mean, I want that too. However, remember weeks back we were talking about, like, I'm waiting for this thing to adopt a point of view, and I was like, it could subvert it, it could go straight. I don't know, but I just don't feel like it has a point of view. The reason I'm like, okay, now I know, is because I feel like the show has stated its point of view now, which is
hardcore gender essentialism.
Well, in the service of procreation, specifically. That the idea that the tragedy that faces these kids is that they'll never grow up to make families of their own. That's the tragedy that the story is framing.
I like that the show frames it as from this position that the men and women are just two different species. Yeah. You just have to somehow communicate with each other. And it's like you're the same fucking species. If you saw a television show made by frogs about frogs that treated the different genders of frogs this way, you'd be like, this is fucking ridiculous.
Well, and and well, beyond that, I mean, we're a good bit more complicated than frogs, but like I see what you're saying. It's more that like this it punishes its characters too, because like people are having trouble relating to or sympathizing with or anything out of these characters, because guess what? When you write stories like this, men and women are different species. Well, then a lot of the men aren't going to agree with how you're characterizing the men as essentialist, and a lot of the women aren't agree with how you characterize the women. It's like, well, I'm not like that. That's silly. It doesn't make sense. I don't see these people as people. Like, it's something you probably shouldn't frame a whole story around. Like, there's a reason that the most universal stories that like speak to people's hearts are about how people are not easily boxed. So boxing people is a mistake when it comes to characterization, I think. So, yeah.
Well, here's the thing. It's a third over.
Yeah.
If that. Barely. So it's got a ways to go. Keep watching it. We're going to keep talking about Darling and Franks on Anchast for your listening pleasure.
Oh, God. And here's the thing. You said, I'm not hate watching it either, because hate watching implies that there's something like I can't believe about it that like angers me or confuses me, that I'm baffled, that I want to see more of. Nothing about Darling and the Franks is surprising to me. I'm not hate watching it.
I am fascinated by it.
Yeah, no, I'm watching it to keep up with the conversation, because like it's well animated, it's easy to look at, and like people are interested in it, and I want to see their perceptions. But I'm not hate watching it, because there's nothing to hate. There's nothing to love either. It's just like, well, not, I don't want to say there's nothing, but like for me personally, there's nothing to love or hate. It is simply a computer printed out a thing that a talented artist did pretty good art for. Like, that's it. Yeah.
I think maybe I'm so fucking thirsty for Eva.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, there's like
I'll watch an Eva clone like this.
Yoji Enokido, like something happened. He did something recently. What did he do recently that was good? He did something adaptationally, like worked with a director that was good. But like when he started doing his own shit after. He and Ikuhara, like, sort of formally parted ways. Like, Ikuhara, like, moved to America and stuff. Like, and Akita started doing his own stuff and some adaptations. And it was good for a while, but he was, like, the Philosomech guy for a while there. And then he just, like, imploded. He made Star Driver, which half is good and half is, like, unwatchable. And Captain Earth, which is just unwatchable.
Oh, God, Captain Earth.
And I was like, what? You know, my point is he was a little bit of the standard bearer for, like, Philosomech shows in terms of how he helped contribute to them. Along with, completely, like, on the opposite side, you have, the Macross guy, my brain just went
Shoji Kawamori.
Shoji Kawamori. So you have those two voices carrying this genre, and right now it's just Kawamori, and it's like, and he's doing Macross stuff, which doesn't have as much of a platform over here. So people are hungry for those Eva likes, because Eva is on break. Kawamori's been doing Macross for a while instead of his other spin-off stuff, and I don't know what's up with Enokido. Like, he kind of bombed a couple years ago. So, like, yeah, people are thirsty for this kind of thing. We just need something interesting.
Yeah.
Because this is not interesting.
Look, I'm fine, man. Give me Eva clones all day long. just give me an interesting one. Yeah. That's fine. I'm not going to call you creatively bankrupt.
I will.
that's a podcast. Mm-hmm. That's the podcast.
Right.
Yo, I also watched The Ancient Magus Bride. Mm-hmm. I caught up with all the way up to what's aired.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, man. I like that show a lot, but I'm having trouble having strong feelings about it. I do think I liked the first half a little bit more than the second half. I'm getting more into it now, but I feel like the middle of the second season was a little weak.
It's moving a bit fast, TBH.
Yeah,
it's moving quickly.
There's so much plot. The
thing I discovered recently that I thought was fascinating, I was looking through interviews with, my brain just broke, the woman who wrote and drew...
The mangaka,
you know, of Ancient Magus Bride, and I know her name, but again, I couldn't remember Shoji Kawamori's name.
We have one of those coming up, by the way. An interview with the mangaka. We have one of those coming.
That's great.
Continue.
Well, so I was looking through those for some information, and I ran across somebody asked her what was her favorite manga, or like what was informative for her, and she had a couple of answers. But like the first thing that she said, and the thing that she focused on longest was Trigun, which is kind of unusual because it's like, well, this doesn't have anything to do with Trigun, right? But when you look at it under the surface, and you don't look at the surface elements. It's like, oh, no, that makes complete sense, because what she tends to do is, like, the cast that actually matters, and this is true of Trigun as well, is, like, three or four people. It's very small. But there is a huge ensemble cast that cycles in and out in order to facilitate, like, giant imaginative things that the artist just wants to draw, like new takes on things like this.
Yeah.
And so there's new stuff, like there's a possessed like demon dragon, and there's a, you know, a fairy realm, and like every single episode changes to a different motif. And Naitao does that too. Like it's a small-ish story and with basic stakes that you understand, but like he's like, and then they faced the guy with 20 guns coming out of his nose, and then they faced, you know, like it's just what he does because he's an artist and he wants to draw that stuff, and like she's an artist. Corey Yamazaki, that's her name, I think. And she wants to draw this stuff, and like I totally get it, but in a and that's also probably what's drawn in a larger audience beyond just like the I like shoujo romance kind of crowd. Just drawn in a larger fantasy audience. However, like, she moves so quickly that it's like, I really love these characters now, and I just kind of want to pay very close attention to their slow and natural and believable emotional growth. So when it's like set piece, action, Chise gets knocked unconscious again, like, it's like, oh, okay, well, it's a little much. And I actually do just kind of want to slow down.
Yeah, I found myself getting a little kind of like whirlwinded, kind of like dizzy. Like, all right, this is a lot. Like, I understand the impulse, and, you know, my suspicion is that, like, oh, I wonder if the author gets bored or just wants to draw a different shit.
Yeah, she's just like, I kind of want to draw this right now.
I have all this fucking material. Mm-hmm. But it feels like there's 15 different new fantasy concepts in every single episode, and I find myself getting a little, like I lose track of them, and then I'm like, there's so much that I don't care. I'm just like, yeah, it's some kind of fairy thing.
It's a fairy thing.
It's very pretty. Like, this is so pretty. But I did appreciate where the story went. Mm-hmm. The journey it took to get to where it is right now is
rocky and
it was
fast.
A little rocky, but I did really like where it went.
Same.
And I think it forces the characters into a particular emotional situation. Like, the show's writing is really fucking clever. Mm-hmm. It's very clever. Mm-hmm. It's very well written, very solid. But, you know, even then, like, I think last time I talked about that a lot, how much I liked the writing, how carefully it was written. Mm-hmm. And I feel like now that's kind of, well, it's a little overgrown, you know? It's like a really pretty plant that's just, it's like, it needs to be trimmed just a little bit. But where it eventually went recently now, there was some discourse about this, right?
I guess so, yeah. Like, last time we spoke, it was you finally saw the scene I was describing where, Elias just eats Chise in order to keep her with him forever.
Yeah.
Well, what did you think of that? Because you were like, I don't know what I think of that. I'll have to see it in context.
I think they're clearly it's foreshadowing. It's mm-hmm. clearly leading to the what happened in episode 21. They needed to foreshadow that in some way, that he's willing to go that far
because mm-hmm. and that Chise is not,
and that she's not. They're setting up. I'm glad I waited, I guess, because now I have the full context, and like that's what they're setting up is mm-hmm. the rift that. That's a story beat to set up the current rift. Uh-huh. They have set him up, I thought, written brilliantly as passive-aggressive, jealous, shitty boyfriend.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Flawless. In fact, I would say, like, the emotions, having been a shitty and possessive boyfriend in the past, deep apologies to my first girlfriend, I was jealous back then, and, you know, obviously nothing like this or anything, like, you know, I'm not, whatever, but I was definitely like, you know, the jealous type. And it's because I was insecure fucko who didn't value himself and so put too much value into this thing. I actually wrote about it on my personal site, zachburchie.com, if you'd be interested in reading about that and my experience. But, the emotion, I was just shaking my head like, you idiot. Like, you stupid fuck. Like, she's gonna kill you.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it felt like.
It's
she's
not even
gonna
just,
kill you, you dumb asshole.
Well, and you can argue like, oh, well, she would die without this. But before that, this betrays like the truth of his circumstances. Like, before he's literally trying to save her life and you know, giving up. He's like, he could have picked somebody other than her best friend, I think, or her only human friend. But you know, if you want to get, like,
very dramatic, but yeah.
Well, yeah, but no, he chose that person because he doesn't like her being in Chisei's life.
Yeah, it's a double. They set it up very well. Mm-hmm. That show really puts it lines things up a couple of episodes in advance for real emotional payoff later. And here you have not only he's willing to kill in order to keep her around. He's willing to kill her best, like do something that is completely outside of her interests in order to satiate his jealousy.
And you would, from his perspective, or what he argues, or the way to make it more sympathetic, is that she will die without this. But prior to that, thinking back before that, when stakes were lower, he withheld an offer of a college application for her. And they were like, you know, she's going to find out about this. And he's like, that's fine. Like, he comes up with his own excuses as to why he's not supposed to tell her yet. And it's like, oh, that's who you really are. And I don't think that this means, like, oh, he's a terrible toxic influence and you could cut him out of your life. Because, like, they're not dating. Like,
right now he's toxic.
Yeah, right now he surely is.
But she knows
she
that.
Yeah, and she left. And so it's not like, oh, well, this person, you know, throw them out or whatever. Because Chisei's got a lot of problems, too. Like, she actively puts herself in danger in order to verify to herself that her life has worth. Like, oh, my life has worth if I can give it up for somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, and that's horribly shit. Like, that could be extremely taxing on a person in a relationship. Like, it is a selflessness. And it, so, like, they're both fucked up. So it's not just like, oh, yeah, she should get away from Elias and she'd be better without him. Like, you know, she's alive because of him and not just because he literally rescued her, but he did teach her a lot about you know, taking care of herself and valuing herself. So it's a very complicated emotional situation is what I'm saying. But yes, for now, he's taking a step too far and, like, she needs to bugger off, which she did. She's like, all right, I can't. Fuck this. She even left Ruth behind. She left her dog behind, too.
So, yeah, that's the thing, though. Like, I really think the show nailed that aspect of it. And the thing that he doesn't understand is that once he says, like, oh, don't you understand? This is the last thing I have in my arsenal. You need me or you'll die. Mm-hmm. And of course, the only response that she's going to have to that is, then I'll die then, because she can't accept it.
Yeah.
That's accepting someone as your fucking master. You can't do it. It's falling for them at that point. You are being lured into a jealous trap. Uh-huh. And, like,
which she would have been totally – and I love that this was in the first half, I think, where she often said, like, I would have been totally fine with just him saying that he wanted me. And now it's like,
yeah, absolutely.
Oh, now I don't need that anymore.
Oof, I'm getting chills. The emotions on that were really, really solid.
So, like, I think the plotting is a little bit of a problem. The plotting weirdly moves too fast, but the emotional understanding of a very difficult, hard feelings is really good.
Yeah.
You know,
it's tough shit, but, like, it's really, really good. The emotional place it gets to, like I said, I had my complaints, but the place it gets to is just great. Like, tough stuff, too, especially if you've ever been jealous. Don't be jealous.
Yes.
Don't be a jealous person. Mm-hmm. You got to value yourself. Mm-hmm. You got to see worth in yourself. This show, and I really appreciate it, is so much about Chisei learning self-worth in really brutal ways. Mm-hmm. And right. I kind of like that about it.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say, is, like, I think a lot of people are thinking about this show in terms of relationship dynamics, which is important because it's true. Like, Chisei is learning about how to, like, change her behavior and the way she sees herself in terms of how it affects people around her. However, as evidenced by her, like, breaking off, like, basically risking her life and running off with the villain in order to, you know, show Elias that this is not okay, Kori Yamazaki, when asked what the message of the manga was, she said, well, it's not so much a love story. She said, I don't know that she said their relationship is complicated and maybe it'll become romance, maybe it won't, but I don't want to say, like, it's a love story off the bat. She said, the message that I really wanted to convey was something that I think Japan doesn't, this is her words, not mine, something that I think Japan doesn't put enough emphasis on, which is individualism, is the importance of standing by your own beliefs and valuing yourself and determining your own worth as an individual separate from others. And in order to do that, you have to find people who are okay with that individualism in you. And, you know, she said love is like two individuals accepting that about one another and communicating the best they can. And I was like, ah, that's great. You know, because, like, I think that it's like, oh, she definitely knows what she wants to say through this, you know, and it was really interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good quote. Thanks for looking that up. That's That's really interesting. I'm curious to see where it goes. I know the manga's not over yet, and I want to know how this is all going to wrap up. There's only three episodes left, I think, 22, 23, 24. So, yeah, we'll see how they wrap up the season. I'm sure there will be more afterward at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure.
Mm.
For something so lavish, it's so hard to imagine there being so much of it. You know, it's so lush and full and lavish and carefully written that you're like, how do you produce so much of something like this?
It was a big old hit, and they worked really, really hard for a long time and promoted it for years.
Yeah. All right. Well, good show. Took a little while, but it's great. So I meant to watch After the Rain, but I had to do some writing this week and didn't have time for three shows. So, Jacob?
It's still going. It's still...
What's the status of the relationship?
It's still about the same in that, okay, so he's caved a little bit more in terms of, Gabriella Ekins has written a lot of really good words breaking down exactly where they are at emotionally, but basically the temptation that, the condo is facing is that to him, this girl represents, like, this feeling of passion that he's lost in his life. But he realizes this. He hasn't attached any of that to, oh, and I love her. It's not, he is so self-aware that he knows this. And he's like, but I don't think it is unacceptable for me to say, like, look, you make me feel like I'm not a disposable piece of trash 45-year-old man who wasted his life. And that makes me really happy. But that's selfish of me. Hmm. And so he's accepted that, but he can't communicate it to Akari because there's no way that she can understand this because she's a 17-year-old girl in the turmoil of emotions that she's horribly unself-aware. She's like the least self-aware person. And so that's where it's at right now is like he realizes this, and so he wants to help her, but he's like, I am helping her. I'm trying to show her, hey, just because you can't run track anymore doesn't mean your life is over. Let me help you realize that, but I have to do it without making a boo-boo. Like, that's where he's at. And where she's at right now is the thing that she's realized that she's come to some self-awareness on is, I don't know anything about this man. I say that I love him, but I really actually don't know anything about him. So in order to be honest about this, I should probably actually learn what he likes, what his life was like. Like,
he needs to become a person to me. Uh-oh.
Yeah, exactly. So you know how the relationship's going to end there, you know, but like it's still extremely sweet and funny and beautifully produced, like some of the shots. Yeah, the biggest thing that this show has done that's unique, not that other shows haven't done this, but like you don't see it every day. Is the way that it conveys all these characters' emotions through the weather. Like, what is happening, how the sun is being framed, the colors of, like, you know, a rainstorm, etc. All of that is, like, extremely fine-tuned to whatever the protagonist is feeling, because she doesn't talk about her feelings at all, and she doesn't understand them. So they use the weather to show what she's feeling, and not in a, like, obvious, oh, it's raining and I'm sad, and it's sunny and I'm happy. Not that. Like, very subtle, creative ways.
A show about a girl who can control the weather.
No, it just happens to be that way, because that's the gist of that's the metaphor. It's a metaphor that runs the show.
You know, I read a story once about a girl who cried a river.
God damn it, I knew this was going to happen.
And drown the whole world.
The very second, I was like, oh no. Ugh.
I'll watch the rest of that show before... so it's going to be over in like 2 or 3 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think I'll watch all the rest of it, and then on... Because next week we have an interview episode with Andrew Partridge. I'm very excited to do that.
Cool.
And the week after that will be another episode like this. So we will... we'll revisit. If it's over by then, it should be over, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, it ends at the end of March. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll see how it goes. I'll get to it, though. Like... Our next discussion of that show will coincide with the ending. There we go. That's a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
The other show that... Well, actually, I didn't mean to get to this one, but I asked you to talk about it.
Yes.
This is the Antarctica Girls. How are the Antarctica Girls faring? Have they made it there?
So they did finally make it there as of... at the end of episode 9, they stepped onto Antarctica ice.
Okay.
And it...
all right. Well, we can get to the Twitter questions.
Yeah.
No,
I was 5 episodes behind, but everybody was saying that it was really good, and like I, you know, everybody was just singing its praises, even though I was like, it's okay. So I watched, I caught up with it, and it is good, and it's thoughtful, and it's clever, and the cinematography in it is really beautiful, and the animation's solid, and like there are a lot of things to like about it. But I figured out why I don't care about it, why it doesn't connect with me. I figured it out.
Okay.
Because at first it was like, oh no, is this a moe thing? But I realized much like Shirobako, like this is like, oh no, this has like a relatable like female perspective. These seem like real people. This is not like a come soothe your emotions in this like salve of little baby women. Like it's not that at all. These are realistic teenage girls. However, it's the different. Basically, the difference. I would say that this also applies to Love Live, the original show, not Love Live Sunshine. Love Live Sunshine, that was too far into baby women for me, but that's just like there's going to be disagreement on that. But Love Live Sunshine felt too plastic for me. Love Live, however, they felt a little bit more like real people. But the thing that Love Live and this show do that turns me off a little bit is they reach a giant emotional, melodramatically conveyed catharsis in like every episode. And so I am good for it. So Shirobako did that like once every four episodes, once every five episodes, and I really enjoyed that. The pacing was like that, but Shirobako was like, sometimes things are just quiet, sometimes things are just dull, sometimes things are like funny in an understated weird way. But the Antarctica Girls, it is always like an amazing revelation of like, this is what it means to have friends, this is what it means to realize a dream for the first time, this is what it means to like make a mistake but know that everything's going to be okay. And it's all conveyed in like this melodramatic way with like laughing and like synchronized laughing, you know what I'm talking about, synchronized laughing between friends and shouting at the sunrise and stuff like that. And it's like that's good every once in a while, but when it's every single episode, you know,
it's funny to think about.
even when the girls' emotions are relatable, and it's really hard to quantify, because it's like, this isn't like the moe, this is not a real person, this is a fantasy sold to guys thing. It's not that at all. It's just treacle. It's more traditional treacle. Like it's like sappy in a way that speaks to more of a female audience, but it's still sap. And I just don't like sap. That's just me. If it's really, really sappy, then the stakes need to be huge. They can't just be like, I had my first adventure as a high school girl.
So every episode is like, so if I just believe in myself, you're saying I can do it? And then you get the
the emotions.
And then the next episode is like, I don't have to cry anymore.
Is very that. And Love Live was like that too. And I like Love Live.
Love Live
is
exactly like that.
Yeah. Well, and I like both of those things.
Not every single episode, though. Yeah, I guess so.
Basically. I mean, like, it wasn't... Honestly, Love Live is better than this. But, like, the first season. The second season is... The first season of Love Live, not counting the movie. You know what? That's what this is. This is, like, the first Love Live movie. So it's not into, like, kind of watering down the characterization, but it is into being too melodramatically indulgent. Like, that's the layer it's hit. And it's fine, but it's just too much for me. I'm like, because these aren't high fantasy crazy stakes and it's not a weird allegorical metaphor for, like, societal things, I can't deal with this level of emotion given the realistic... the otherwise realistic setting and circumstances. I know it sounds weird, like, you know, four girls going to Antarctica, but the trip is like, the way that they characterize the trip and the preparations needed are all very realistic. They're very detail oriented. Like, it's a travelogue straight up. And it's a believable and immersive travelogue. So the big emotions don't fit. It's too much. I'm like, all right, I need this to be a little more Shirobako and a little less Love Life. So I figured it out. That's why that show does not speak to me. It's good. It's charming. You know, check it out if you like that sort of thing, but it's sappy. You gotta have a fairly high tolerance for sappy. And then you'll like this, but like, it crossed my sappy threshold.
Just want to drink that maple syrup.
You want to drink it right from the fucking tree. That's kind of what the show is.
You're saying, I don't have to be scared. And you just
chug the sap.
Chugging that Aunt Jemima.
Yeah.
All right.
It's about much.
Yo, let's get to some Twitter questions. I don't think I'm going to watch that. Antarctica Girls.
I don't think you would dig it, to be honest.
Nah, let me find these Twitter questions, though. Surely I can do that, at least. I can. Here we go. First question. The Flu54 wants to know, now that we've seen the trailers for Riku Hara's new project, what do you think it's about?
Pansexuality.
All right.
It is the colors of the pansexual flag.
Moving on.
That's it. Well, that's all I have to say. And otters. Otters. It's about otters. I don't know what the river otters have to do, but that's his new animal of choice. I don't know what he has to say about pansexuality, but it's literally the flag is hanging there, so okay.
Okay, so it's about pansexuality specifically.
There's three trailers. The first one begins in pink, which turns to black and white. The second one begins in blue, which turns to black and white, which that makes you start thinking about gender. But then it's yellow, which turns to black and white. Yellow, not usually a color you associate with gender, but red, blue, pink, blue, and yellow are the colors of the pansexual pride flag, which in the full logo, yellow is in the middle for this show, even though they introduced it last, which means that was on purpose to try to get you thinking about that. And, then it's a bunch of cryptic stuff about, like, consumption and death and lies and, you know, Ikuhara stuff.
All right. Well, we already know. No reason to watch it.
I'm so excited. I can't believe I have to wait a year, but I'm so excited.
Okay, hopefully it'll perform better than Yurikuma Arashi.
Yurikuma Arashi.
But this is a MAPPA thing, right?
Yes.
That means it's going to look good.
Hopefully. I'm excited, right? Like, yeah. It's like, oh, they get to... Well, his shows always look good, but sometimes they just don't have animation.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Penguin Drum had the best animation of an Ikuhara thing, not counting that it was in a movie, but, like, of his TV stuff, Penguin Drum got the best animation. It's like, oh, maybe this will surpass that, too.
Great production design, production itself, nah.
You know.
I'm looking forward to it as well. Let's see here. All Soon No Dare wants to know, do you think there's a chance Franks will pull its head out of its ass and actually have something interesting or innovative to say?
There's always a chance.
There's always a... I mean, if I didn't think there was a chance at all, I wouldn't be watching it.
The probability is quite low. There's always a chance, but...
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, look, I would say, though, at this point, unless you're like me and you're like, I'm just going to watch the whole thing. I don't give a fuck. Call the fucking cops. Mm-hmm. Maybe don't feel so obligated to keep it up.
Yeah, wait.
Don't feel like you have to watch anything.
Of course.
Ever.
But if you're if you're like, maybe it'll get better, then I would say, like, stop now. Stop as of that sitcom episode and come back when you hear more about it. Unless you're like us and you're just like, no, I'm committed to this. I'm going to do it. But if you're waffling, now would be the time probably to go, I'm going to wait.
Yeah. CC Takato wants to know, not counting the Kardashians, which mainstream celebrity would you be most shocked to find out liked anime? You know what? None of them. None. Mm-hmm. None.
Yeah, I don't really... it's hard for me to, like...
It doesn't surprise me when people are into it. Anime's cool and good. Why wouldn't you be?
Right.
I know that sounds like I'm trying to make some kind of a statement, but that's true.
It can't be. Ancient Magus Bride is cool and good.
People like... animation.
After the Rain is cool and good. I know these aren't the shows that they're watching, but those are cool and good, you know?
Yeah, so I'm not surprised by it. I think Justin actually gave a really good answer for this on Answer Man on Friday. Yeah. It was about, is it cool to like anime now? Because Kim Kardashian, his publicist, told her about Darling in the Franxx.
Yeah. He's like, pick this. This girl has pink hair and people are watching it right now. Pick this.
You know what? I think that sucks. I think we shouldn't do that. I don't have any fucking evidence that Kim Kardashian hasn't watched Darling in the Franxx. I don't have any fucking evidence.
You're right.
It's lame to do that. I think that sucks. So let's not do that.
You're right. I just...
Who knows?
I mean, that one's not, like, on Netflix, and it's not... I can see why people
are
what?
Like, she's a person just like anyone else. Has the same kind of brain. Can just look at things and watch things and access
right.
Crunchyroll
you're
like
right.
any other
There's,
fucking
you know
person.
What? I think it's just as likely either way, so I shouldn't cast aspersions.
I think reacting to it like, no... is kind of like, well, is it? Like, really, though? It's just television.
I don't think people are being cynical about anime specifically so much as they're being cynical about celebrity when they say that.
Sure.
But, you know.
Yeah, it's hard not to be, though. We live in America.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yeah. I honestly, like, that stuff is usually, I think, good for the anime industry because it brings more exposure, and more exposure is a good thing. I still kind of follow that road. Most everybody I know in the industry wants it to have more exposure, not less. So, I generally follow that. I don't think that it's a good idea to try and gatekeep like that. You should welcome.
Yeah, I'm not saying boo. I don't want Kim to like anime. That is not what I'm saying. I by all means, like, anybody who wants to get into anime should check it out, and I don't want to discourage anybody from looking at it at all. I was purely saying the choice of Darling in the Franxx is like. Well, that one's suspicious. But, like, again, you don't know either way. You don't know anything about this person's personal life, so no need to cast aspersions. I understand why people are doing that. Like, if she put up a picture of a character from Bleach, I wouldn't have batted an eye at all.
If people didn't bitch about Kim Kardashian on the internet, I don't think she would have that much of a career, to be honest.
It's quite true. There's no reason for her to not embrace, you know, these sort of things.
Okay, let's go on. This person with an extremely long screen name says, what was the biggest robbery at the Oscars? Be it movies that didn't get nominated or movies that didn't win categories that they should have. Well, we talked about it. I really thought The Florida Project got robbed. But again, I fucking slept on it until the day of the show. So what do I know? He says, for me, it's The Last Jedi not winning Best Score and Lady Bird not winning anything, any of the Best Actress categories. Yeah, you know what, man? I fucking love Star Wars. I think if any Star Wars movie deserves awards, it was that one. Mm. Like, holy shit, that was good. And, like, special. But, you know, whatever.
Well, the perspective it was reflecting on is not going to be appreciated by the average age or interest of an Academy member, which is much older.
Yeah, there is no part of me that expected that or thought for a second
or
needed it to happen or really wanted it. No. It's just fun to talk about.
Yeah.
Let's see. Zinky says, hardly a surprise, but were you happy about Coco winning? Yes, now. I'm like, oh, it deserves it. 6 months ago, I would have been like, Boss Baby, though. No, that's not true.
I hope not.
Let's see. Morals Without Standards asks, what's the best show this season, and why is it Michiru Neko? I'm not watching that. But for real, are there any shorts this season that interest you, even just as a temporary palate cleanser? Well, Pop Team Epic doesn't count, right?
No, it's not short. It's
Man, that's very clever what they did with that, because I don't perceive it as a short anime, but it kind of is.
It is, yeah. I mean, it would be a short anime if you didn't watch both halves, which I do.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But it's 12 minutes of content.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's clever. It's clever. I could see other shows doing that. Because the perception of a short anime in the minds of people, it's dismissive, I think.
Yeah.
Those shows really struggle to gain a real traction and audience because they're so short. I mean, name a really big smash hit short anime, like, more than...
The closest is Galco-chan, which also
Galco-chan was popular.
Yeah, and it was actually popular in Japan, too, weirdly enough.
Yeah, but those little 15-minute ones, man, it seemed like, I'm sure it was like, this is cool, and also, by the way, we can get a little bit more mind share with people, and like, it's 23 minutes.
Yeah. Aha. Yeah. Now, the only short that I'm watching is Michiru Neko. Because I've always loved that. I've always loved the shorts that they put up, the music videos and the little bits and bobs that they put up on YouTube, like, and have for years. So it was like, I'm just going to watch this. It's just a bunch of dumb gags involving potato cats. Like, that's it. But there aren't any, like, I mean, unless you're a big fan of Degashi Kashi, which was not originally a short, then, you know, there's not really a whole lot to.
Yeah.
Or the Fate Cooking Show, which turns out is monthly. We thought maybe it was weekly, and it's like, no, it's monthly. So we're still covering it for daily streaming reviews. It's just that you get one of those a month, so, you know.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Noel, our comedy asks, which has the more ridiculous piloting setup, Pacific Rim or Darling in the Franxx? Well, it's kind of the same. They're just in different positions.
Pacific Rim is two people piloting a thing, like, with mocap.
Well,
Darling in the Franxx
visually.
is fucking a mech to life.
So it's Darling in the Franxx.
It's Darling in the Franxx, you know. That's
I was just saying visually all you'd have to do in Pacific Rim is just put one person in front of the other. And it's pretty much, it looks similar anyway.
I suppose.
It's kind of a dumb, specious comment, and I'm not sure why I added it, but here we are. Moving on. Hey, Manji wants to know, have you ever been burnt out on anime? Yes. What's the longest period of burnout? How do you handle being burnt out when your job consists on consuming anime? It's a good question that we get a lot, actually. I was burnt out for about 6 months, probably a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. The way that I coped with it was just limit the amount of anime that I watch to the extent that I can. I still had to watch plenty of stuff, more than the average person would need to watch for my job, but... The difference is I just don't really engage with it much more than just, like, I need to create content based on this stuff, and that's how I engage with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And you can kind of go into that mode for a little bit, but it's not a good place to be. if you work with anime for a living, you need to try to get out of it pretty quick, I think. And I did, and now, actually now I'm in a period of extreme interest. Like, I'm really embracing it right now. But you go through those waves.
In this season?
No, just over the last, like, year or so.
I know, say. I was just making a joke.
I'm watching plenty of stuff this season. Mm-hmm. Pop Team Epic is really good. I think it's really good. Anyway, so, yeah, I mean, like, I'm enjoying anime this season. I think it's really good. And you go through waves like that. I think most people go through waves like that in their career. You have to cope with it responsibly. You can't disengage completely, obviously, and there are ways to do it. So I've learned how to manage it. I've been doing this for a very long time, and I've done an okay job managing it, I think. There are some times where I think I let myself slip a little much, but I generally come back from it. So it's okay, I think. What about you, Jacob? Any tips on managing burnout?
I'm an extrovert, so I don't know if this will – such a dumb thing to say. But, like, it's true. I'm an extrovert, so I don't know that this will help people who are more introverted or on that side of the spectrum. But for me, how I get away from burnout is that I interact with people, either about anime or not about anime at all. But I feel like I get burnt out on anime when I feel like I'm just consuming and I'm not doing anything with it, even if it's for work. Like, if it's for work in such a mechanical way that I'm not involved creatively, then, I have to like consume it anyway, just to like, you know, like, check over details in a review or discuss it for a podcast or whatever, like, it's not the same thing. So, I have to discuss it and have fun with it with other people. And then that clears up my burnout, more, or I have to discuss something that's completely not anime with other people, but basically just social interaction is how I avoid burnout. When you work from home, you have to actively pursue. So, you know, whether it's online or off, you have to like actively pursue it in order to, but that's personally how I stem off burnout. And it's worked out great for me because I've never gone through periods of burnout where I'm not watching anime at all. I have been watching anime continuously for years now and have never, I just take like a couple weeks off, but I've never like gone for months. So, yeah, that works pretty well for me. But, you know, I'm not sure if that'll be helpful to others. It's helpful to me as somebody who, like, thrives on social interaction. So, you know.
Okay. All right. Gyrus Infinity asks, now that it's coming to Blu-ray, do you think it's a good time to do an Ancast for Avatar The Last Airbender? Man, I've avoided that show. I haven't watched it. You can't make me.
It's pretty long, so.
I don't want to do Avatar.
Yeah, it's pretty long. It's not technically anime.
Sorry, I don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. I just don't. I feel as though the moment has passed.
Right.
Like, the moment passed.
Right. No, I don't disagree with you.
Yeah. Plus, I feel like if we do something, if I'm going to put that much time into a show, it should be, like, anime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not to denigrate Avatar, whatever.
No, I get where you're coming from. No worries.
Humble Mumble asks, do y'all think Franks would be somewhat better if it didn't take itself so seriously from the beginning?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Playing the weird stuff straight makes it feel like it doesn't have a sense of humor about how uncreative it is. Like, if it was a little more goofy, like, it wouldn't make it a good show, but it would at least make you feel like they understand that this isn't the most creative thing in the world. Like, when they're playing these beats straight, it's just like, okay, are you
expecting to like be impressed?
I disagree. Like that. Okay, so how do you feel?
I don't like that. Like, maybe then they'd understand. Like, they fucking know what they're making. Come on, like, that's
no. How they would make the audience feel? Like, the audience is invited in on the joke instead of trying to impress us. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, I don't know. It seems like a fairly confident production to me. In that it. I don't know. I try not to.
It's really confident about the ham and cheese sandwich it's giving us, but it's a ham and cheese sandwich. If you draw a smiley face on it, I might remember it more.
Please make that, Joe. I wish that were Darlene.
Here's a ham and cheese sandwich, but I've cut it into like the shape of like a butt or a smiley face.
Now don't put your dick in it.
Yeah, but don't put your dick in it. But like, you know, my point is having a sense of humor about yourself can lighten your ambitions to be more approachable, to invite people
in. I see what you're saying. I understand now. I think the only thing I would say to that is the worldview position that it is presenting is so. That's nice, sweetie. Like, that's nice.
See, now who's being
that's, condescending? Look, I can condescend about that shit. Okay. Absolutely. It's come on.
No, I agree with you. I'm just saying, like, hey, you know, you see what I mean.
I think there's a difference, I think, between saying, here's what I think, what, like, projecting motivations onto the production team is where I draw the line.
Okay, well, that's not what I was attempting to do.
Okay. I understand, yeah. Well, no, I think it's good to talk about it, you know? Like, Dice42 asks, how would you improve the anime awards? Oh, it's Dice. Hi, Dice. Hi, Dice. It sounds like high dive. Anyway, how would you improve the anime awards? At least there'd certainly be room for improvement, mainly more genre categories over character categories if necessary, limiting how many times categories a single show can be nominated, or how many categories a single show can be nominated in. Yeah, I think, you know, I think there's, of course, there's plenty of room for improvement, and I think Crunchyroll will be the first people to tell you that. They're definitely refining it for next year. I mean, we talked a little bit about how I think it could be different. I don't think that limiting the number of categories is that terrible an idea, if only because every year if there's something that's one show that's really popular, which is not that uncommon, it's going to dominate and you're going to get the, it's rigged, like, you know, that, you're going to get that. But then there's a, like, what can you even do to avoid it? But then you might wind up using that attitude to justify not making any changes, which is, you know, it's, there's pitfalls here. So, I mean, you know, the conversations that I had with them at the show, it seemed like, oh, yeah, totally. Like, they've got plans to improve and everything, and they know that the voting this year, I think the categories could stand some improvement. I really think split, if you're going to have films, they need to have their own categories, absolutely. I'm not claiming to have the answer or know the system, but I think maybe, at the top of my head, there seems like there's merit to the, a show can only be nominated across X number of categories. It can only win X, Y, or Z or whatever, but then it feels like you'd have to further compartmentalize all the categories and, you know, further differentiate so that you're not robbing something of something it deserves just because it's nominated in too many other categories. You know, you run into a lot of different problems. Like, there are people at Crunchyroll who currently are being paid to figure all this stuff out, so I think they'll probably do a better job. That's a weird thing to say because they did a great job this year. I think they will definitely improve on it for next year, and we'll definitely see some improvements. But that the TV and film thing is a big thing, I think. That really seemed like it made a big difference to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the biggest change that I would like them to – I know that they weren't like necessarily able to this year, and I'm not saying this should be this way, but like it would be great if they could have the resources to have people accept those awards from the staff.
Yeah.
That would be the big thing. It's like, well, if this was possible –
okay. All right, we got two quick ones left. Firkwin Root asks, is it okay to separate artists from their work? I feel MMO Junkie is kind of getting an unfair rep now that the views of the director have come to light. Is it still cool to like that show? Same with other scandals like Kenshin's Mangaka. Well, let me point out an important difference between these two. I think that the director on MMO Junkie was a gun for hire and, you know, came on, did the job, didn't write the story. That's based on a book.
No, a comic, a webcomic.
A manga. It's based on a webcomic. Thank you, Jacob. It's based on a webcomic. It is an adaptation of that. It seems like a straightforward adaptation of that. His politics are not in it. That is a show where I think that it's a shame because every single time you're going to have to say, ugh, the director.
Right.
But I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Also, on this stuff, I leave it. It is always to the individual for me. I don't
Is not telling
everyone's
anybody
personal.
How they should feel.
You have a personal reaction with – my personal relationship with the art you consume, whatever that relationship is valid. And it's yours. And it's not for me or anybody else to judge. So you make up your own mind on this shit. But for me personally, I'm never going to watch MMO Junkie again because I watched it once and there's nothing else there for me to see. Mm-hmm. But I'm not like, I'm not like, you can't watch MMO Junkie. It's just like, read about the director first, or maybe know that the guy who directed this did this. Mm-hmm. If, you know, it is a good thing to understand at least before you know what you're getting into. Kenshin is another matter. Dude's a convicted child porn.
And he wrote, drew the whole thing or whatever.
And he drew the entire thing. That is his story. Again, it's a much more complicated subject. Mm-hmm. I relate back to my earlier post. You make up your own mind. I will never probably consume Rurouni Kenshin again. Mm-hmm. I don't have to. I watched it in college 20 years before anybody knew he was a pedophile. So, you know.
Right.
I kind of lucked out, right?
True, yeah.
I experienced it before it was horribly, before this absolutely blood-curdling reveal that would destroy it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, make up your own mind, man. I don't think that you should let people judge you for making those choices.
Yeah, I think that the best thing that we can do is talk to people about where their personal boundaries are and respect that, and like, you know, just basically just don't like feel like you have the right to tell anybody else what they can and can't do. If you're not okay with it, then you're not going to be their best friend, and you should stay out of their business. So long as they're not hurting other people, it's not your business. But drawing your own personal lines, for me personally, my own personal line of like, can I digest this or not, is how am I financially contributing to the life of this, the life and further career of this person by ingesting and discussing this media? And is it in a way that is like not good considering the gravity of the thing that they've done? So that's consideration one. Consideration two is the worldview of this thing related to the bad thing that they did?
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, if for Rurouni Kenshin as an example, like, you know, I don't remember it distinctly enough to remember an actual example of anything like this. It's certainly not, you know, front and foremost in this. But if there was like a lolicon joke or like a central character who was, you know, a young girl or a young boy, and it was, you know, and it was specious, then I would think that that would be much worse than if there wasn't. So if like a person, the bad thing that somebody did, does not factor into the worldview of their work and its message and how it tells people to normalize certain attitudes or whatever, and then that's different from than if it does. You know, if a pedophile writes a pedophilic work that's subtextually like you can notice and you can talk about like how it normalizes bad stuff, that's very different from a pedophile wrote like an action thing for adults that actually doesn't have anything to do with that. That's my personal line. I'm not saying everybody should feel that way, but in separating art from the artist, that's how I feel.
All right. I think that's very solid explanation. Okay, here's the last question, Jacob. Also from Firkwin Root. This is an important one. Right now, are you thinking about Hellshake Yano?
Well, now I am.
I am. I think about Hellshake Yano legitimately.
Sincerely a lot.
Yeah. A lot.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm in the shower and I'll hear those two guys going, "Wow!" And I'll see the paper guy like move around in my head. Mm-hmm. I'll think about Hellshake Yano.
Yeah.
All right, man. That wraps it up.
Yeah, AC Club is great, and their shit. All this, they did the Bob Team Epic stuff. You know, all that stuff is them. So if you like the Hellshake Yano and Bob Team Epic, like you should look up the other weird stuff that they've done, because that's just what they do with their lives and with their small studios.
Yep, so. Totally. All right, that's it. We'll see y'all next week.
All right, bye bye, everybody.
Okay, that's our show. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Play, Google, whatever. You know all that stuff. Leave us ratings and reviews. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all next week.